Mackenzie, breaking news. Zombie apocalypse is starting in 60 minutes. I need to know, where are you heading to hunker down? What direction are you driving? Are you heading to a structure of some sort? Who's there? What's your game plan?
Oh, yikes. Okay. My brain's going like 10 different directions at once, which I know is super shocking.
Typical.
Well, my instinct is definitely to drive, like almost drive, I don't know, just out in the middle of nowhere, like just keep driving, right? Like keep moving almost, mm-hmm. because you can get yourself away from certain places. I think the hangups there, of course, well, you will eventually run out of gas. And so, you know, can you stop? Is it safe to stop? All those kinds of things. If my grandparents were still alive, I would go to their house because they had a bomb shelter in their basement, even here in Texas.
Oh, wow. Which is we don't even have basements here. How do they have a bomb shelter in the basement?
Exactly. It was a very, like, very minimalistic, but it is rare to even have a basement, like you said.
Yeah, they violated so many building codes to make
it. There definitely didn't have a permit for it, is what I'm going to say, because it would flood on a semi-regular basis as well. Not like full-on flood, but it would get some water at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So like all the shelves for everything down there were like a little bit higher so that nothing would get wet, because it was that much of a recurring theme. But it was full-blown concrete, like it was secure. Yeah, if they were still here, I'd probably go hunker down there. It's very small though, so like
how many friends could you bring?
Like two or three to like lay comfortably, to maybe be able to sleep. Like you could have two or three people in there. It was very small. But the last thing that I think of is I don't remember if you know this about me. I used to work, in a very different industry than you and I work in now. Uh-huh. And I worked for some very wealthy clients, very, very, like we're talking the 1% of the 1%ers. And they have some security, you know, like, I know I did it. I sold it to them, and they got panic rooms. They got fences, they got electric fences, they got a million cameras, they got all kinds. I would call one of them. I would be like, guys.
But that's the whole reason they installed all that shit, is to keep people like you out. You might
It to them, so I can be like, homie, I hooked you up. You just, one person, just take me in. And
you,
I know,
you trust Jeff Bezos, Mackenzie? You think you know him real well, and he's your buddy? You don't think everybody else in his life is?
Listen, I signed a lot of NDAs. I can't say who, but I do trust them.
Does it rhyme with meth? Razors.
It does not.
Okay.
How about you? Where are you going? Of course I picked three options, but what would you do?
We were joking before we got on, if Mackenzie's gonna somehow be like, I'm going to 10 places all at once, because
I believe in my power to multitask. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
I honestly think, I don't know if it was because of this movie, but Janelle and I ended up going to the mall today. And I was just like, dude, if you can get there early and lock it down and make sure that you're only letting, you know, non-sick or bit people in, the mall is a great fucking spot. And especially the mall in this movie, they got a gun shop across the parking lot. From how they fucked this up, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I think the mall, you've got exercise equipment, you've got plenty of books. If you're lucky, there's still a Sam Goody in there, and you got some CDs. You got toys. There's just food, everything you can need. There's furniture, there's beds.
Yeah. There's a little space to spread out and like get your own space from people. Yeah, mm-hmm. I do remember thinking that in this movie, that was like not a bad choice for sure. It does seem like too many points of entry for me though. Like it seems like you not working at the mall would not be able to fully secure that place, you know?
Feels dangerous. And the security guards in this mall have guns, which is I haven't seen a ton of that. And to my knowledge,
I don't think Paul Blart, whatever it is, mall cop, had a gun. It feels like a no.
I think you knew Paul Blart's actual name and you just said whatever to pretend.
No, I literally don't. Is it Paul Blart? Was I right?
Paul Blart, yes.
Oh my God. See, I've never seen that movie. So like my secondhand absorption of pop culture is kind of scary, to be honest.
Fair enough. All right, let's get to it.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I am Mackenzie.
I'm a zombie. No, just kidding. It's Lamar. They can't.
I mean, close enough, right? I mean, right?
This is a back-to-back episode, so at this point, you're I'm on probably, autopilot.
Probably so. Yeah. We are on our second drink, so close enough. But today we are continuing our Inaugure April with one that I haven't seen. Last week we did one Lamar had not seen, and today we are doing Dawn of the Dead.
2004. Yay.
2004. He keeps saying that to me.
Well, you have to specify because people who enjoy zombie films, unlike yourself, will be like, 1978 original, so much better.
All the same. Like, why do you guys care? Anyway, yay.
Now I know how you felt when I was criticizing Star Wars. Yeah.
Exactly. Literally, exactly. All right. Well, before we start fighting, what are we drinking?
So I mixed up something that I am calling Zombicide because it is like fluorescent green.
It truly is. I wish y'all could see it. It's outrageous.
It's a shot of Midori, two shots of citrus vodka, some lemon lime. And then I got really crazy with it and I threw some celery bitters. Pretty damn good. I mean, it's a bit sweet, but
They're getting out of control with the bitters, though. Like, can we Kamate with the bitters? Like, how is there a celery bitters to begin with? I'm glad it turned out great, but still. Well, that's lovely. It's at least a very pretty green, you know? Yeah. Well, I have quite the glass collection, as Lamar knows. So I have my nice skeleton glass here. Mm-hmm. I also have my skull ice cube. So I'm really on theme, guys.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. So this is a Japanese whiskey, some lemon, some lime, some simple syrup, nothing fancy except for the egg white froth on the top that I threw on there for, I don't know, little zombie goo kind of vibes. I will say I have an even better name for this. I think it's very poetic, but still on theme. Death in the Afternoon.
Ah, feels accurate. You should name drinks at bars.
I feel like I should. They should outsource that job to me. I don't know that I should come up with all the cocktail recipes themselves, but I could name them. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh, well, cheers.
Cheers.
I could also style them now that I think of it, because my glass collection, pretty solid, just saying. All right, so let's get into some basics of this film. As Lamar pointed out 27 times to me, this is the 2004 version of Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, you got it. Yeah.
Which I had that in my notes. I was getting there, but he cut me off. So anyways, 2004 version, and it's pretty highly rated. So this is another one of those situations where I'm the oddball out. Lamar was the oddball out last week. I am the oddball out. I will acknowledge this right up front. The IMDb rating was a solid 7.3 out of 10. And the Rotten Tomatoes was 76% for critics and 77%, so not far off, for the audience. So pretty popular. Pretty.
I think even on rewatching it, it's a fun film. I mean, if you're not a zombie film fan, you're not going to enjoy it. Keeping in mind, it just occurred to me before we started recording, it's 20 years old at this point. And for a 20-year-old horror film, that isn't necessarily a classic where it's something that sticks or is groundbreaking, like, you know, an Exorcist or a Shining, where it's something new, just retreading a zombie formula, but it's 20 years old. For it still to feel this fun on a rewatch for me was pretty surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it that for sure. I mean, it kind of holds up for being like, there's some definitely a few things that are dated and don't land well, but I think overall, like, from an effect standpoint and even overall kind of a setting standpoint, some of that still resonates and kind of feels like you could buy it for sure. And it doesn't, again, there's not like something outrageous from a CGI perspective or anything like that.
There's one thing that's kind of outrageous from a CGI
perspective. There is one thing, but overall there's one little thing, but they're not too bad, as I will give it that.
And then the last thing I want to say before we get to the plot summary is, again, based off the 1978 original, I mean, the similarities are that it's a zombie movie that takes place in a mall, and that's pretty much where the similarities end. And obviously the original is from the Romero Dead trilogy of Night, Dawn, and Day, and he ended up doing more, but we don't talk about those as much. But I think this one does justice to the original while still being different. But I really, all that is to say that we're not really going to reference a lot of the 1978 one today, because Mackenzie's viewing is just based on a single watch of this, the same way that we didn't go into the book details on Dune last week. So if you're here to moan about how things are different from the original, we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to analyze this film as a standalone.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like you said, I mean, I did read up on it, and there's a few like character references that carry over from the prior mm-hmm. one and names and things like that. But otherwise, they're fundamentally different. But they also had to modernize it, to your point of that at that point, that was an older film and they needed to update it. Mm-hmm. So it's not that weird that it's a little bit different. But yeah, so let's get into some basics. Writer, cast, crew, all the things. Director, Zack Snyder. I know a handful of you got to know who this guy is, but this was his debut for his directorial debut. Yeah. So he is known, as you guys probably know, for 300, mm-hmm. Man of Steel. And then following that, the Justice League and the, as they call it now, the Snyderverse, which he ended up dropping out of, but for familial reasons, not because they didn't want him. Mm-hmm. Watchmen. And then funnily enough, which I didn't know about him, a shit ton of music videos. Did you notice that?
I didn't know that either. Do you know any off the top of your head that he did?
Not off the top of my head, but there were some that were very notable that I remember going, like, scrolling through and being like, okay. But yeah, he's done a bunch of them. Beginning of his career was all music videos. So yeah.
He also put out a very shitty zombie film last year called Army of the Dead with, funny enough, Dave Bautista, who was in Dune last week, but not a great movie. If you want to talk about, we should watch that, and that we can criticize the shit out of, because you want to talk about loose ends. Yeah, that is a piece of shit film.
Again, anyway. If you want me to just roast something, sure, let's do it. I will just bitch the whole time. But yeah, I think Dave Bautista, whatever you say his name, I feel like he just does literally everything that he's given. I don't think he is super discerning about his role selection.
But he's getting offered pretty good roles. I mean, I didn't see that Knock at the Cabin movie, but I feel like he hasn't really, ever since he got that role of Drax, it seems like he's been given pretty solid roles to do, so I wouldn't say no to a lot of them.
I think he just kind of plays a similar, not exactly, but like a similar mm-hmm. type of character to me, and it gets a little old, but you know, you do you, boo, have a great time. But we also have the writers on this one are, as we know, really George Romero is considered, he's credited as a writer for this because it's the origin story was from his work, as you said. So the 1978 screenplay.
I don't think he had much to do with this.
No,
He did say he enjoys it, but I don't think he even pitched in at all, which, you know, I wouldn't if I were.
No,
you know?
I think they riffed off parts of his script is what I read. It's like there's literally parts of his original material that they pulled from. So they credited him. And it's also, it's an homage to, I think people call him like the godfather of horror, you know? So mm-hmm. he's somebody that they want to respect in this, again, from a source material perspective. So, but the majority of this was written by James Gunn, who, again, you may have heard his name if you pay a little bit of attention to anything Marvel. He does a ton of the Marvel movies, you know, but
mostly
Guardians
of the Galaxy,
Suicide Squad. He's also been a producer on a bunch
of
those.
Don't get the nerds on us now, Mackenzie.
Oh, I am one of the nerds. I was about to clarify. Okay. So Guardians, Suicide Squad, yes, is DC. And, you know, not our favorite outing, but he did okay. Yeah. And then all the Dead People movies.
All the what?
All the Dead People movies was my note. He does a bunch of Dead People movies. Zombie movies, Dead People mm-hmm. movies, horror movies.
Slither.
Bunch of those.
Slither's a fun one. You get some Nathan Fillion in there.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You're not on board. You're like, no fucking way.
I did read that Nathan Fillion was considered for one of the roles in this one. He did not get it.
I could see that, actually. Yeah.
He was supposed to replace, I don't remember his character's name right now, but the Jake Weber guy.
Michael.
Yes, exactly. So he was considered for Michael. Yeah.
And apparently there was a bit of a backlash because now we all know and love James Gunn, and we know he has that signature wit and style of humor that Marvel has sort of stolen and run into the ground at this point.
They didn't think, though, for this.
Just formulaic. But prior to this, really his big credit was Scooby-Doo, the live-action movie. Mm-hmm. I personally still think is a blast. It's corny and cheesy, but I still enjoy that one. But a lot of people, when they heard he was writing this script, were kind of pissy about it. And I think he sort of turned it around and rubbed it in their faces.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. But also a ton of, you know, I don't know, horror, zombie, comic book movies, those all mm-hmm. have a certain level of like silly cheesiness to them. So it makes sense to me. Honestly, even if I heard that cold right now, I'd be like, okay, that jives. But yeah, definitely some uproar around Scooby-Doo not being able to do horror. But he did well. The major cast and crew here, it's pretty big, pretty solid cast here. I may miss some, Lamar, so you correct me if I do. But one of our leads here, we have a couple, but Sarah Polley is playing Anna, right? Anna, I think is her name.
Yeah, Anna.
And when I looked at her acting credits, they're all like a lot of just B movies, some indie movies, a lot of stuff I didn't recognize. I recognized one or two, but like never saw them. They weren't big blockbusters for her, really.
Yeah. And I think the only thing, and I haven't even seen this, but I knew you had mentioned it from a film that came out 2 years ago called Women Talking that won an Oscar for, I think, best adapted screenplay or best original screenplay.
I think it's adapted because I think there is some source material, if I recall correctly. But yeah.
But she wrote and directed that film. So one of your favorite movies, you kind of have this zombie film to thank in a way. So
I will say, yes, thank you for teaching her that she shouldn't be acting and she should be writing. So she made a solid career decision there is what I would say. And that film, yes, Women Talking is incredible. And she does a beautiful job at that film. I just think this is not her shtick. I don't think this is for her personally, but we'll get into all of that. Also classic. We love him. Ving Rhames of many. Yeah, many, many things, many famous things. Pulp Fiction, obviously. Mission Impossible, obviously. But one, Deep Cut, Cobra Bubbles, Lilo and Stitch, y'all. Show some respect.
Yeah, I've only seen Lilo and Stitch once. I probably did recognize that that was him, but it didn't stick with me, I guess, enough to.
He even looks like him in the animation. It's so great. And he has on his knuckles, my favorite part is it says Cobra on his knuckles. He's got Cobra tattooed on his knuckles where he like shakes her hand and she's like, does it say Cobra on your knuckle? It's so cute. I love that movie so much, in case you weren't aware. But also, Mekhi Phifer, you know, of the That Boy Is Mine video fame, you may know him.
I was going to say from that verse on the 8 Mile song. Where also, Eminem says there is no Mekhi Phifer. It's a very Matrix line. Like, there is no spoon. There's no Mekhi Phifer.
Yep. He's in 8 Mile. He was in Shaft. He was also in Honey, I remember, which I used to own, actually, in high school. I was, big into that movie for 3.5 minutes.
Mekhi Phifer had a good decade or so where he was in a ton of shit.
He's in everything. I was looking at that. Exactly. He was in everything for a decade. He was in ER. Do you remember him? He was in ER, of all things. Yeah, he was in everything for a while there. Love that. And then we have Jake Weber, who I really love. He's in a couple of lesser known things, but he is actually great in everything that he does. He's very rarely the lead. This is like one of his few lead roles, but he's also been in Pelican Brief, which is a great movie if you've never seen it. Meet Joe Black, same thing. Also great, little long, but incredible. Homeland, which is TV, if you haven't seen Homeland. I didn't finish that, but I finished all but the last season, and he's in that as well. He's really good. He's good in everything he does.
I think he's good in this. I think that the writing in this doesn't do him a ton of favors because his character is almost too much of a strong leader where he doesn't seem to get shaken by much, and he seems not wooden, but just sort of like, we need a white knight in this. And it's not his fault at all because I think he's playing it very well, but the script isn't doing him a ton of favors.
I think that's the British in him showing, the English in him showing. It's just that stoicism to him. He's a classically trained actor as well. So who knows? But I agree with you. I think his performance is great, but it's a little one-dimensional, I would say.
I agree with that.
Ty Burrell. He is of what?
Modern Family. That's where I know him from. Yeah.
I never saw that. Asshole. Yeah. I never saw that. I've just seen clips of it, but he is such a fucking asshole in this. It is really on brand. He also, the only other things I've seen him in was Incredible Hulk, where he makes a very brief appearance, to be honest, and then Morning Glory, random rom-com, and he also plays a total creep in that with a foot fetish. So he is very much typecasted, is what we have learned.
It's just one of the actors that can just play dick really well, and I think
Inevitably, it makes me wonder, are you like that? I know this is just not true of every single situation, of course, but sometimes you're like, at least a one of you has to truly be an asshole to really make this work,
Well, Chevy Chase, if you're looking for a precedent.
Yes, exactly. All right, we also have Michael Kelly, who plays one of the security guards, kind of the head security guard. And CJ. CJ. He's from a couple things that I know him from are Adjustment Bureau, which actually doesn't have great reviews, but I love that movie. I think that movie is just really fun. It's based on a short story that I also love.
Okay.
And then House of Cards.
That's where I recognized him. Yeah. Well, I saw him in this in 2004, and then I was very proud that he ended up on that House of Cards show until we figured out that Kevin Spacey was a piece of shit. But I was very happy that this guy was on there killing it.
And he did great, and he has yet to be proven to be a piece of shit. And he is a total fucking cutthroat asshole in that show, but he's so good at it. He's so good at that. So love seeing him. I had not seen this like origin of his. So that was kind of fun for me to see him in this totally different context and role.
Yeah.
We also have Kevin Zegers, who hasn't done a ton. I do remember seeing him in Smallville because I was a big Smallville fan. So,
okay. I had no idea this guy's name, and I feel kind of bad for saying this, but what I said when he popped up on screen when we were rewatching this last night to Janelle was, he looks like Ian Somerhalder, and then I said Ian Somewhat Halder. Like, he's just like sort of a version of, like, a bizarro version of Ian Somerhalder, but he didn't get on Vampire Diaries in this universe.
That's good. That's good. Nice. Because it is, he's like one step removed, you know? He's like, he's very close, but not quite the cigar, for sure. And then finally, I had to reference him, even though he's a very short cameo, Tom Savini. From Dusk Till Dawn fame, which was, if you guys don't remember, pod fans, our literal first ep was Dusk Till Dawn versus throwback. Crimson Peaks. A little throwback moment for me. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, and while you're on the topic of this, so you're not going to love this, but the reason that Tom Savini has a cameo, as well as Ken Foree and Scott Reiniger, I think is his name, but all three of them were in the original Dawn of the Dead, and Tom Savini actually did, I believe, the visual effects, and so he got to, I know he said we weren't going to talk about the original movie, but in the original, he actually got to make his own death scene, so he did like this disemboweling of his own stomach, which he ended up doing his own death scenes in probably a dozen or more films over the years.
They're like, he's really good at this. Let's just let him do it. Let's just let him commit. You know,
killing himself on film.
I did read that he was in it, but I didn't know all of that. So that's super cool. And then we also have music and score. It's like, there's not really much of a score to this, as I'm sure you can anticipate, but there is a solid soundtrack, musical soundtrack.
What were your thoughts watching? I mean, do you want to just talk overall now and get into the specific moments later? Or does it make more sense to just say some of the music in this just hits, comes out of nowhere?
Weird.
But I love that.
Weird. It is. Exactly. I will say that. It is every single time. It was like kind of a jolt of like, what the fuck is that? Like,
what's Johnny Cash doing here?
Right. Why are we playing this right now? But somehow, I don't know. It did kind of complement it in most situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was unexpected kind of repeatedly. But I do think it sort of complemented what was happening in the movie, even if it was like a juxtaposition thing. You were just like, this is kind of funny. But that was done by Tyler Bates, but there were several specific songs that were Zack Snyder picks that he like had to fight for and was like, no, I want this in. And he had a couple that they were like, nobody wants this. I think it was like House of a Thousand Corpses was his pick where he was like, this has to end on this song, like in the credits or what have you, if I recall correctly. But there were a few choices of his that people were like, no, nobody will like this. And I wonder if those are the weird moments for us with the sounds.
I think that the weird music choices make this movie more memorable. I think the Johnny Cash one, when you listen to the lyrics, it makes a ton of sense why it's in there. And it makes this great sort of backing track to all this chaos happening in the world, you know, for better, like coming to an end in this film. And then the Richard Cheese cover of Disturbed's Down with the Sickness is a moment in, I remember seeing this in theaters 20 years ago and just laughing our asses off at that. But it just, that moment holds up so well, that montage of them in the mall while that song of all things is playing. It's memorable.
I think the songs really land. And another one that stands out to me is the elevator moment, which, fun fact, is there was not intended to be any music playing. And CJ's character, they get into the elevator, they're running away from zombies, and they get into the elevator and they kind of get this little breath moment. And he just looks up like he just heard something and he's like, huh, I really like this song. And he improvised that in the moment, and then they picked a song and added it in, and it's very like chill elevator music vibes, and it's, yeah, it just lands really well. I will say that was pretty funny.
That's a cool way to improvise, because worst comes to worst, they just cut that out.
They just cut that one line.
You're referencing nothing anyway. It's not ruining anything, but they ended up, you know, embracing it, and I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah, you didn't ruin a cut or anything like that, so it was a good move. It was a good move. But yeah. Real quick plot summary for those of you who may not know or need a refresher. So a nurse, a policeman, a young married couple, a salesman, and other survivors of a worldwide plague that is producing aggressive, flesh-eating zombies take refuge in a mega Midwestern shopping mall. Pretty thorough, right? Anything else?
By Midwestern, they mean Ontario, Canada.
Right, which is, was it Ontario? I thought I was thinking Vancouver, but you're right. I think it wasn't Ontario. Point is, it's Canada. It's a Canadian shopping mall, which I think is, you know, supposed to be, what, Indiana? Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a zombie movie, you know, but it did pretty well on its budget because other people besides myself like this movie. So $102 million. Against a $26 million budget. So not a bad return.
And apparently they had the budget slashed at the last minute because prior to this, House of the Dead, another video game film adaptation, had come out and bombed because that movie was a piece of shit. I've seen that too. So just for the record, Mackenzie, I don't love every horror movie. This is a winner. But House of the Dead bombed, so they cut this budget at the last minute. So for it to still do as well as it did and then blow away at the box office was pretty cool.
Yeah, I totally thought it was worth it. Super love it. No, I'm just kidding. I do think that's, you know, solid performance for, again, you have to make adjustments as filmmakers when your budget gets cut last minute. So they obviously did a good job calling an audible and still making, like, there's nothing stood out to me, for example, that I was like, oh, this is like poor production value or they lost their, but you know what I mean? Nothing stood out as like they missed a mark as far as the production of it all, for sure. So pretty good.
Yeah.
So I would say this is your wheelhouse. You take the wheel, my friend. Talk us through this gem
great,
of a film.
Great.
Gem
yeah, thank of a you. Film. Thank you for getting the words right. So I'll lead the discussion today. I will say we're just going to spoil the shit out of this. It is 20 years old. So if you're planning to see this, obviously, if you don't like zombie movies, maybe don't watch it.
Turn around, don't drown, because you will.
Experience. If you enjoy horror movies, zombie movies, anything, action films even, I would say, or comedy action, or James Gunn, or Zack Snyder, any of those things, I think this is worth a watch, because I do think it's a fun experience. It's not a perfect experience, but it is fun. So let's start at the beginning. What did you think? Because I texted you and I said, this is like one of my favorite opening 10 or 15 minutes in a horror movie. I just think it sets the tone right away. It jumps right into it and you get thrust into this. A lot of times in horror, you get a character who's going to die in the first 10 minutes. They're just setting the tone of like, there's a killer somewhere. There's a slasher. This person dies. In this, we sort of jump right in with our main character and we're sort of caught off guard by literally about 4 minutes into the film, we get a zombie attack and then it is just pure fucking chaos for six or so minutes before the opening credits. So what was your reaction watching that as a first timer?
Let me read you my note verbatim, okay?
All right, let's
do it. So
it
opens and I go, ugh, I already hate this.
What did you hate, Mackenzie? What did you hate?
I just love that you specifically texted me like, this is the best opener ever. And I immediately was like, I hate it. I hate it.
What did you hate at the beginning? They're in hospitals? You don't like hospitals?
No, I don't like hospitals, actually, but okay, for unrelated reasons.
Got to the bottom of it.
You know, hey, when you spend a lot of time in a hospital after your accident as a child, you do hate hospitals. But no, that's not the why, although that doctor doesn't seem great, but whatever. Okay, for context, I watched the trailer to this and to 28 Days Later, I think was the other one we were talking about.
Yeah.
Right. So I watched them both to pick one and decide which one to go forward with, whatever. So I had basically just seen the trailer, and the trailer has a fair amount of that opening sequence in it. Okay. As like a good chunk of the trailer. So you have like the little girl makes an appearance before she's, you know, a zombie. And then you see her in the bedroom. And at that point, you don't know, like in the trailer, you don't know who she is. You assume it's their kid, probably, to be honest. But I had seen that scene take place already in the trailer. So I completely expected it. And I assume that that's why, because I was just like, okay, great. She's a zombie. And I just was like roasting it the whole time. I was like, she doesn't look normal. I don't know if you're asleep and bleary eyed or what, but like, she doesn't look fine even in the shadows, you know? So I was like, why is this guy running up to this kid? And once I knew, especially watching the full version, that it wasn't their kid, I was like, why are you not totally creeped out by the little kid in your hallway? Have you never seen Children of the Corn? Like, this is not a safe space. Don't walk over there. Well, and then, of course, she turns out to be a zombie.
But I think most horror films, the suspension of disbelief is that the characters in this film have not watched other horror films in most cases.
I know, but my fundamental issue, with most horror is suspension of disbelief. So I will totally own that right now, is I am just looking at the logic of it and going, this is ridiculous.
So you're the problem. The problem is you.
I have never said I wasn't. I'm super the problem.
Fair. Because I can defend these points, but if you're already admitting, you know,
no,
this personal
I just
bias,
don't buy it. It's what it comes down to. I just don't buy it.
I think if you're living in a residential neighborhood and zombies have never, you've never seen a zombie film, that's never been a thing that's existed to you, and the next door neighbor's kid stumbles in and is covered in blood and is missing part of their face, you probably would run over and be like, holy shit, what the fuck happened to you? Are you okay? So I think it tracks logically. And he is, to the actor's credit, I think he does do the bleary eye thing. So maybe he doesn't realize just maybe how hurt she is. But yeah, and I mean, I don't think it's fair to say because you watched the trailer and then started the movie that you knew everything that was going to happen.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean I saw that sequence. And when we're talking about the opening specifically,
so it took some of the tension out of that scene.
Right.
That's fair.
I just mean like I knew that whole scene, what was going to happen. And so it didn't land to me the same way. And I'm totally saying I think it's having watched the trailer right before. All right.
So what about when she actually jumps in? Because I think it's weird watching this because Zack Snyder has a very specific style that I always think of him as doing. And it's a lot of slow motion and sort of like the weird use of lighting that sort of lended itself to when he took over the DC universe for a little bit. But I think of it with like 300 and Sucker Punch. And in this,
Have that note, the lighting.
Yeah. Okay. Because in this, I just thought it was weird that we got these shots, the overhead of the town as she's arriving home from work, where it's slowly, like it's multiple shots, but it's dropping down to her house. And that sort of mirrors itself when she gets into the car and is speeding around and we're zooming out and seeing it, the chaos on the way out. I give Snyder a lot of credit. I'm surprised he sort of, I don't hate Zack Snyder's style, but I think he backtracked a little bit because I think he does some creative things here visually.
I can appreciate that for sure. I can appreciate the shooting here. I can appreciate the lighting. Again, it's my second note, actually, where I was like, there's some very post-apocalyptic lighting here, and I think it really checks out. Like, it really lands. And I like the way the creative, again, if I hadn't maybe just seen the trailer or whatever, the creative use of lighting, even in that scene, makes a big difference of how you would interact with this kid in the hallway, right? So I give credit to the production aspect, the cinematography aspect of those moments. And I do think that's really, and I do think that overhead shot, to your point, is like really creative and interesting. I don't like once we get into that opening sequence so much, though, of her getting in her car and some of those, like all the crazy things that are happening around there. And you see other people are already just pure mayhem. And I can't remember the order of operations exactly, but certain people get killed and get run over. And then some guy at one point tries to get in her car. And like, I just see her pause at multiple points. And like, back to your question of me at the top, like if I am escaping a zombie apocalypse and I am trying to get the fuck out of Dodge, I'm not stopping. Like, I'm not stopping to look at things. I'm not stopping to like evaluate. I'm off-roading this bitch and I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. Like, that's the goal. And she totally leaves herself susceptible to this random guy to come attack her and try to take her car. And then she, of course, crashes her car like a fucking idiot. So,
well, have you ever heard that theory about horror that part of the enjoyment of horror, especially when it comes to this isn't a slasher, but when you look at slasher films, is that it's supposed to make you feel smarter than the characters, because then when they die in slasher films, for example, you almost like laugh at it because you're like, how could you do something so stupid? It's that classic trope of like yelling at the movie screen of like, why would you go in there? Like, that's part of what makes horror enjoyable, because you get to feel fucking smart and like, I would do so much better in this situation.
I think maybe feeling smarter than other people makes certain people feel good and enjoy that. It just makes me angry. I'm like, you're stupid. And so I just don't, I'm like, be smarter. Maybe other people enjoy being smarter than other people. I just get annoyed at it. So maybe that's why
you say angry, but you have a big smile on your face while you're saying it. Just saying. So anyway, all that to say, that's what gets us to the opening credits. I do, again, the Johnny Cash opening credits, I think, are great. I forgot about the sort of intercutting of the news segments plus the actual credits with the blood smears. And I read online, blood. Yeah, real human blood real that he's blood. Using for these credits. And I forgot, again, I think with the scene you were talking about where she's driving and there's a bunch of stuff happening around her, I think that was kind of ahead of its time, because now I think of a lot of the one shots or even a film like 1917, which is designed to be a one shot of all these things have to work perfectly. This isn't a one shot example, but I think this was just ahead of its time of like, here's 5 minutes where it's happening in real time and there's all this shit going on.
Yeah. And I do think he has several shots like that. Just speaking to like later in the film as well, he has these long shots. They're not like one shots, like to your point of 1917 volume and length, but he has these longer shots that lend themselves to some continuity of the scene in a really interesting way. So I do like that. And I think that she does center you in the action as a character. Like, even if I'm annoyed at the things that she's doing, she maintains the, and it's partially the way that it's shot and it's partially the way that she's acting, but she maintains your attention in the middle of the mayhem, which I do think is hard to do. You know, it's hard with all these distractions and these cutaways and things like that to maintain that kind of center focal point. And they do a good job of that.
Yeah. I think that's a good call out for as much as you and I agree that Sarah Polley's performance, it's fine. I don't think it's a horrendous performance, but I think she and Michael are two likable leads. The two main characters in this feel semi like real people. There's a few caricature type characters in this where it's like, oh, this is the former gangbanger, and this is the cop who doesn't have time for anything but himself, and this is the like redneck semi-racist character. It does fall into that sort of stereotypes, but I think the lead characters in this are pretty likable. But moving out of the credits is when we finally, like, let's just talk about the mall. And I don't think we need to touch on every plot point, but when they get to the mall, we meet all the other cast of characters. Any moments at the mall that stood out to you?
I think there's several things at the mall where you realize this could be really good or this could be really bad.
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting choice of where to hunker down. It's not a bad idea, but it's like, again, you can think of reasons why it could be a bad idea in the long term. And we find that out to some degree. So I think that was my first thing of, this is going to be potentially hard to defend, but I can see why it would be a good resource. You see the initial interactions are really interesting. And again, to your point, there's a lot of like tropey characters that make their appearances. And
I think before you move on, I'm sorry, but I need to say, I think they foreshadow what you said about this could go really good or really bad, because the line always, the first time I saw it in theaters, it made me laugh, and it makes me laugh every time. When they first run into, when Sarah Polley and Ving Rhames' characters run into the other group, and they're sort of like, well, we went that way, we got attacked, we lost five people. And then Michael just deadpans, we're going to the mall. He's not really excited about it. It's just like, well, this is kind of what we're going to do.
This is what we're going to do. Yeah. And I also like that before that, he has this big pause between something else he said to them. I can't remember. And then he goes, yeah, back when there were eight of us. And it was like, he's already a little adjusted. He's a little deadened to numb to this situation in what seems like a pretty short period of time. I mean,
he's been through like three divorces, Mackenzie. So maybe he's just got that wall, you know?
Fair. Having been through one myself. Yep. Yeah. I can't imagine three. That must be what it is. You're right. But yeah, so he's already, I don't know, he's like climatized to this already. But it helps get, you know, Ving Rhames and Sarah Polley's characters to like come with him, and that's good, and obviously precedes all the action thereafter. But the fountain scene, to your point of like anything that hit you right away, the fountain scene where the zombie is like there, I'm like, okay, so we've already established this place is dangerous and we're gonna lock ourselves in here. And also that fucking zombie in the water was the worst performance. It was so bad. Like, and I just had to be like, okay, it's just, he's just doing a really bad death. whatever, fine. But then you, of course, come back and you find out that he's, quote, a twitcher, which really with this, yeah. A twitcher? Okay.
Well, you gotta shoot him in the head, Mackenzie, otherwise.
Obviously, yeah. Obviously, them's the rules. But I like, it's funny, it like harkens back, they see, or actually it's later, I guess, they see the cut of Tom Savini's character playing the sheriff, who's like, you gotta shoot him in the head, and you gotta set him on fire, and all these things. He's just so in it and ready to fucking win it. And I just love that short little cameo of like, obviously this is what you have to do. He's like, I got it down. Like, you're clearly
just. Yeah, he's figured it out in like 5 hours because this shit just started that morning. This movie does take place in a pretty quick timeline. I think the whole thing is supposed to take place in like less than a month for them hunkering down at the mall and trying to escape.
It's
and
29 days, which I think is funny because it's inspired in 28 days later as well.
So, let's spin off of that then, because the thing that sets this apart in 28 Days Later, apart from traditional zombie films, is obviously the running zombies, which was a fucking game changer as somebody who had seen probably 10 to 15 zombie films before seeing this one from all the other decades. And no one had ever, I don't know if no one ever thought to do this or if this was the one that popularized it, but this in 20 Days, what were your thoughts on running fucking zombies?
Well, I read about it after the fact, actually, or midway, maybe I was researching while I was watching it, because my initial reaction was, this is what I hate about zombie movies, the fucking inconsistencies of like 1 minute they're zombies as we know them, right? These like listless characters who are just motivated to eat flesh, but it's got to be put right in front of them or whatever, right? And then 2 minutes later, when there's a threat or somebody's trying to escape, they're running, right? And I think that there are a couple of movies that have done that, where all of a sudden the zombies have a crazy power that they didn't have.
You just want them running constantly.
I want them to commit one way or the other is what I want. You are either a listless zombie who can barely move and just are the undead, or you are a runner, you know?
You, because if I got turned into a zombie and I could run as fast as I wanted to with no exhaustion on my lungs or my heart or anything, I would be fucking sprinting all around the earth.
Sprinting
like,
over.
I'm fucking Flash. Yeah.
Well, it's the only way that I will run. So I agree with you. Like, if I had to not breathe while running, then great, let's do it. But I will say that I read about that because I was like, there's going to be they're going to run and then they're going to be listless and whatever. And then to your point, they can run throughout. And it is a consistency that I didn't expect. I will say that. And I gave Zack Snyder a lot of credit of being like, yeah, he was defending that choice of they don't always run. And I wanted them to be able to be active and all these things. But at least he was consistent about it was my thing. I was like, I don't care what they do. I just want them to do the one thing. And that's their behavior.
That's, you know? I mean, I can empathize with that because anytime there's a sci-fi film, I'm just like, dude, just tell me what the rules of the universe are, but stick with those rules. So I feel you. Yeah. I was also laughing, backtracking slightly, when right after the opening credits, Sarah Polley's character gets out of her car and a cop points a gun in her face and is like, say something. And I'm like, this poor woman is concussed. And I just wanted she says like, please. And I just wanted her to be like all concussed and fucked up and just go, Biscettios. Just can't think of what to say. It's like, say something.
I did think, I mean, she sounds completely coherent, but I did think please was a weird choice too. Like, it would have been funnier if she was all discombobulated, but I was like, please, that's it? That's all you got? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I love his move to just straight up gun on her. Like, and literally my note at that point was, Bing Rames is here. We love Bing Rames.
I think it makes sense. I think the paranoia in this, it's always funny when you watch, as somebody who does watch a lot of not just zombie films, but horror films in general, but you have to reset your brain every single time to like the characters in this don't know the rules, right? Unless it's a Scream movie.
But I think that's true of vampire things as well. Yeah. Just a little asterisk because I do like vampire movies. I'm not a zombie person. I'm definitely a vampire person, which I think you're usually one or the other. Anyway, same thing. Like you have to reset the rules. The system of rules changes by whatever vampire universe you're in. Exactly. So that was what was interesting here for me is like getting acclimated to, what are the rules here?
Yeah. And not just the rules of the zombies, but I brought it up all to say of the distrust at the beginning of him putting the gun on her of when they get to this mall and the security guards just putting them at gunpoint and saying, we're not letting sick people in, because at this point they don't know what it takes to get sick. We get that later with like, it's the bite. Right. And obviously everyone who's seen a zombie movie knows it's the bite, but the characters don't. So,
but here's my thing.
Yeah.
Really, sidebar there. Like, even if, I mean, I can't say I've never seen a zombie movie, so maybe it truly does inform my thought process here. But honestly, what do we think is going to do it? Like, if you think of any other epidemic of any kind, even like ones that we live with as humans that don't turn us into zombies, bodily fluids of some kind, like 99.9% of the time, are involved. Like, yeah. Do you think it's going to be okay that this thing bit you and got its saliva on you or its blood on you or whatever? That's the part where I'm like, this is just the fact that I'm supposed to suspend that disbelief is not unique to this universe. That is just contextually stupid to assume that this thing can attack you or slobber on you or bite you or bleed on you or whatever, and nothing's going to happen. Like, I just want to know, what do they think is causing it?
Yeah, like, and also the fact that the military doesn't even seem to pick up on that. And I feel like the military would be the least the most likely to shoot on sight of, we're not going to let anybody in here who has any sort of complications from this. I hear you. Say, you said bodily fluids. Say it again.
Bodily fluids.
Okay, we just increased our view count by like 3 people. Awesome. Okay. So we move on. We spend a lot of time in this mall after we get to this setting. I thought there was some fun, humorous moments in here. There's obviously a lot of tension, but once things sort of settle down, I really like the scene where they're shooting quote unquote celebrities.
Oh, in
the parking lot.
Okay. Yeah. Like that.
You see the shot of you see the bullet
Burt
shot.
Burt Reynolds. And then, he's like, he didn't even look that much like him. Like,
yeah. I like how they open the scene though with you're just looking through a scope and then you see the zombie get shot. And in your head, you're like, that kind of looked like Jay Leno. And then they cut to the board of it saying totally Jay Leno. I'm like, that's James Gunn at his finest right there.
I do agree with that shot. That cut is very good because you almost like for a split second double take and you're like, is that supposed to be Jay Leno or a Jay Leno lookalike or whatever? And then they cut over to the sign that says like, get Jay Leno. I do agree. I thought that was funny. I thought that whole relationship with Andy and what is Ving Rhames' character name again?
His name is Kenneth.
Kenneth. I keep forgetting that. Sorry.
They don't say it out loud that many times.
They don't say it much.
I feel like it gets said maybe twice.
Yeah. So Kenneth and Andy, their relationship, friendship is super wholesome and adorable. I love that they're across buildings playing chess together and he's losing. And I love his like, we need a new game. You know, like, and that's how they get to the shooting of the celebrities. Right? He's like, I just want to play something that I can fucking win. And I'm like, listen, Kenneth, I get it. We don't like to play things we're not good at.
He's a shoots and ladders guy.
I love that you have all the board game references ready because you're such a little gamer nerd. But yeah. He's the easy game guy is what I can say. And the other guy is like, let's play chess. I just thought it was adorable, their little back and forth. So that was fun for me.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think as the other characters show up here, we get the entire Down with the Sickness montage, which is kind of fun in itself of like, okay, we're here, let's kill. Yeah. And I think it's about 3 to 4 weeks that they pass the time in the mall there. So you get that. You get Ty Burrell being a total douche nozzle.
Oh, he's the one who ages the most poorly from this film. He says like, it's him or one of the hickey security guards who says the F word, the anti-gay F word, I should say.
Talking like, about lattes, which all of us drink. So
right,
like,
okay,
buddy, just
come on,
you're
bitch.
Not cultured,
like, yeah. Right? Like, you will order a mocha latte if you're alone. Fuck off, exactly. And so, just judging people's orders and this like toxic masculinity bullshit. But yeah, he's terrible throughout. But I also he just leans in. I guess I can give him credit there. You know, he's wearing the douche pajamas from the department store and is like constantly drinking coffee and whatever. So he does a good job of being terrible.
Yeah, I like his line where. Kenneth's talking about his brother at the military base and he says, oh no, it's a bloodbath. And he goes, are they dead? And well, dead-ish in the sense that they fell down and then got back up and started eating each other. That line,
I mean, that is pretty funny. That is pretty funny. We'll give him that. Fine.
So we need to talk about probably the one thing that was bad at the, not only has it not aged well, but even at the time, I was not a huge fan of this scene. And it's the zombie baby. So let's have you react first.
Okay. Yes. I have so many problems with this. One, I think it just is like kind of back to the beginning vicini for me of Mekhi Phifer is disappearing with this woman, and the nurse, the registered nurse on staff, wants like, to check to on the pregnant lady. And obviously any sane fucking person would be like, yes, please check on my pregnant wife or fiance or whatever she is. And he's like, nah, she's good. And he's very defensive. And nobody is like, that seems weird. Right. And also after we had somebody get bit and they had to, that was a very heart-wrenching scene of this father and this daughter, and this father has to die, and like he accepts it gracefully and all these things that are terrible. But that happened slowly. They figured that out slowly. They figured out the bite was the problem, whatever. Anyway, so then he is defensive about somebody seeing his wife, and nobody's like, hey, could she have been bitten, you know, and nobody checks it out and whatever. And then, of course, the elderly woman goes and checks on them all alone, and the shootout ensues and everybody fucking dies. But the baby is like one line too far for me. You know, it's like one step too far for me. Like I wanted it to be that if that had to happen, that it died when she died. You never see it. Doesn't ever come out, because she dies before giving birth. And so you would think if her body is dying, that even in a short period of time, that the baby is also dying as a result of her body dying. And that's what I was hoping for. And I had a bad, bad feeling that that wasn't what was going to happen. And then, of course, it didn't happen that way. And he forced birth people. It's a problem. He forces her to give birth to this baby. It's then a zombie, which he then tries to defend, which is fucking insane. And then they all die, and they have to kill an actual
Janelle
baby.
Made the point that you could have kept it for like 6 months until its teeth started coming in. It wouldn't have been able to hurt anybody. So it could have been a fun baby to have around.
But I also wonder if like spirits. The fluids, again, like the fluids might be a problem. Slobber, saliva.
True. Yeah. And those things throw up all the time. I don't know, Mackenzie. I don't think they could have just had the baby die with her. It's like, it's the Chekhov's gun of zombie movies. If you have a pregnant woman and she gets bit, well, we got to see that baby. But yeah, I didn't love the visual. The like CGI of it was not great. The eyes were weird.
I think it's bold to kill a baby in a movie. I think, and not just like let a baby die. I think it's bold to literally kill a baby. And
yeah,
I did not love that. Yeah. I agree with you. I didn't like the effects of it either. I just was like, it looks weird. It is a weird CGI moment.
And I want to clarify, it's not a moment that's meant to be celebrated. And it's not saying like, oh, that moment's awesome. Like, it's meant to be part of this tragic experience. And granted, it's in a horror movie, and there's like these undertones of this isn't serious, but yeah, I hear where you're coming from. It's not for you. But what I do want to point out is that I thought it was a little ironic. And the first thing that threw me off was that Mekhi Phifer's girlfriend, wife says, I want the baby to have a Russian name. And he says, no, African name. His wife's name is Luda. And I was very confused. I was like, can we not compromise? Because maybe that's a Russian and an African. Because Luda, I only think of Ludacris.
But I was going to say, because Ludacris, obviously. So. Oh, yeah, they could have done better with that. But, you know, it's fine, I guess. I will say the sequence of my notes are, baby shit is fucked up. And then, dog! Because the dog makes an appearance. And I had immediate amnesia about the baby shit. I was like, everything's fine. There's a dog. Everything's cool.
Yeah, Chips is one. Like, that's funny that that's one of the character names I remember is Chips, the dog. Yeah, I like the fact that the zombies don't even fucking bother with him. I also laughed when Chips was assigned to run a sandwich over.
Yeah, that is some
Andy.
Bullshit, though, that they were just like, hey, we assume the zombies aren't going to eat the dog. What evidence do you have of that? You have no evidence. He was in a fucking parking garage. You have no proof that these zombies don't care about him. And you just right in the thick of it, just drop him down.
They're going off the evidence that they have, because the same thing with the bite. They saw it happen twice and they were like, well, that must be it. And he was running around in the garage. Well, there were zombies in the garage.
Yeah, but it seems like they had just broken in, or at least the way that I read it was like everything had just gone in.
To be fair, I've seen the movie like 4 times. What happens is he shows up, and then one of the characters says, how do we know there's no zombies in here? And somebody else says, well, they would have attacked him if there were zombies in here. But then the zombies do show up. So they're like, the zombies must not care about animals because they didn't attack him or make any noise.
Yeah, I guess I just wasn't sure of that sequence of like, did they just get in?
It's a leap in logic, but either way.
But anyway, don't believe in sacrificing dogs is what I'm saying. but okay, fine. Chips can go deliver a sandwich if they, and then it precedes all this other nonsense.
That on rewatch is the most frustrating. And again, it is just dumb horror movie characters doing dumb shit. Because as soon as she ran out to save the dog, I was like, I would just leave her. Like,
exactly. They're all like, we have to listen. You got into this shit in the first place by trying to rescue Andy. And then now we're going to go right after that. You guys have issues with your learning curve because you immediately go after her again and you're like, well, let's go sacrifice everybody to her. And I was like, this is bullshit. This is so stupid. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to your point, it's just dumb horror movie decisions. I don't know.
It also blows my mind that they've been across from this parking lot from the gun shop for 3 or 4 weeks at this point. And at one point they're adding up their ammo and they say, we only have this many bullets. It's like, you have a gun shop right there.
I think it's just that they can't reach it, at least for the time being.
But they're talking about going. At that point, they're talking about getting in their buses to go pick Andy up. So it's like, well, Andy can just load a bunch of fucking bullets. Why are we inventorying ammo right now?
I assume they're worried that they won't have enough to get across to him. Fair. And continue to defend was my read on it. But yeah. Who knows? But yeah, I think they just have that whole sequence, which of course gets us kind of to the end or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it precipitates the end, which I agree. They had to do something to have a reason to move out of the mall, you know? And so it just forces the timeline a little bit. And so
it happens because the movie needs it to happen. They get back to the mall and Tyburel's a dick and doesn't hold the door for them because what better way to be a dick than to just not hold the door for the six people that are going on this rescue mission. But then the zombies come up. I like that moment where they stop on the stairs, like to your point earlier, like why do they stop sometimes? And here they're like, okay, we got you cornered. I just want you to know we're about to eat you. And then they finally start moving, but they could have just, if anybody had helped,
like they can run but stairs upend them, like I don't whatever,
if anybody had just helped CJ close the damn door, they would have been back in their safe, secure mall and they could have thought out their escape route instead of just jumping on the buses and going.
That's the thing, is like, why did nobody hold back and just get that one door secure? Because we have proven up to now that we're pretty secure, at least, if we keep these doors maintained. But I agree. I think, again, they have to have a reason to leave the mall. The action has to change. And so it's a little bit forced. But that's where those incontinuities come in for me. Of like, okay, the rules have changed. We're going to be stupid now so that we can move the plot forward, I guess.
How did you feel about the curious zombie who lifted up the flaming propane tank over his head just because he could?
Oh my God.
That one stands out to me too.
What is so funny about that is you're right. He genuinely looks curious. He really does.
What is this? What did you throw at me, CJ?
What is this? I am super curious. How does this work? What should I do with it? And then he holds it up like, huh? What it is? And it's and then it explodes him. And so that was the one CGI moment that I was like, not because it was poorly CGI'd, but it was like, that is a disproportionate explosion. That is
for a single propane
tank. That is out of control.
I also laugh shortly after that when they get on the road, the entire second bus crashing. They're literally just driving through abandoned streets. They are in no rush. Like, they're being chased, but they're in vehicles. The zombies are not.
But that was another rule thing for me that I was like, how are the zombies kind of keeping pace with them? Of course, some of them have latched on and that's one thing, but other ones are running pretty close.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, is this because these vehicles suck? Are we supposed to buy that these like mall vehicles are really terrible?
I mean, they're mall buses. I can't imagine they go that fast, but they should be able to outpace.
They should
be able to
outpace a human.
By the time
the
bus crashes, there's not that many zombies. There's like two or three zombies there, but they have time to sort of get their bearings. But I just laugh because the bus just crashes because somebody's like, take a hard left, and the other bus cuts it too hard and they crash. I'm like, that's kind of silly.
And then that whole sequence too, a bunch of stupid decisions are made there. Like, I'm not going to get into it, but whatever. The bunch of super decisions are made there. And then I had the same reaction as Michael, who is like, what the fuck are you doing, Anna? Why are you running back? And then we find out, of course, that she's And I did think of it mid-sequence before she shows it to him. Mm-hmm. I go, oh, it was Ty. Like, so she's getting the keys. And then sure enough, she runs to him and she shows him the keys. And I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. But in the moment, I do think you have the split second of like, bitch, what now? You know, like, it's just one of those.
And it's, and yeah, she gets the keys, but she gets Michael bit. So good job, Anna.
Way to go.
Yeah.
But before we leave the mall, I have to note, Starbucks refused to be a part of this film.
I can't see why.
They were like, we will not be the coffee shop in the mall. No, thank you. So I thought that was hilarious. They were like, this is really bad. We're not going to be a part of it. But anyway, I thought that
maybe
was
funny. It was because somebody used hate speech to criticize lattes. And they were just like, look, we're not. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We're not going to. Exactly. That makes sense. That does make sense. I do think that maybe it was also the killing of the zombie babies. You know, I don't
that,
know.
That might have played a part, too. Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. For sure. Now, we get to the docks, and this is sort of our finale unofficially. Ugh. But I don't understand the logic of crashing the bus into the dock that you're about to walk on at full speed, but then they get out and we have CJ sacrificing himself and blowing it up so that they can safely depart.
And what, I go, CJ going out in a blaze of glory, man. Like, I was like, good on you. Because he was obviously, as we know at the beginning, kind of a douche canoe. And yeah, so you're like, yeah. Really? And he gets more mild, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so then he's had the most growth as a character, perhaps. And he sacrifices himself. And I guess that's, yeah, his hero, poetic hero moment.
Yeah. CJ gets a nice little send off. And then we get Michael revealing his bite to Anna as they're all getting on the boat. So he's going to stay behind. And we get that final scene. I do like that last shot of the boat quietly with no score sailing off. And then the gunshot with the cut to black and the immediate start of that song, People Who Died. I don't know the artist off the top of my head, but that was actually, funny enough, featured in the newest Suicide Squad, which James Gunn directed. That same exact song opens up that movie in the opening credits. Yeah. I've only ever heard that song in film, really. It's never been a radio staple or anything like that, film and TV. But I love that cut. And
everything coming together.
Yeah. And then
I also love that shot, though. I will say, like, the Michael shot and the boat cutaway. I do love that sequence. But what the one thing I will say before we move on, I don't like Anna all of a sudden wanting to make an exception for Michael. And yeah, I don't love the progression of that, of like, she just lost at the, what, a month ago, her partner, fiance, husband type person, whoever, brutally,
terribly.
They were
sharing a bed.
They were sharing a bed. They were having date night, whatever the fuck, her person. And there's already clearly like sparks flying, a thing happening here with her and Michael. And she just seems to have moved on pretty quickly. Listen, he's thrice divorced. I'm 0% surprised. But I don't understand the like need for that hint of romance at the end. I don't think you need it. I think it made her look ridic and him look a little silly too. Because again, it makes you compromise at the very end of, we know exactly what causes this. We know exactly what's going to happen to him. And she's like, I can help you. And it's like, bitch, no, you can't. You have had multiple chances to help people and you can't solve this. We can't make an exception for this guy. And I think that makes it an extra heroic moment for him where he gets to be like, nah, we know I can't be saved. You got to go. And that's great. But it feels so silly to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think they did. I actually called this out of, I appreciate that they didn't have it be pure romantic between them. Like, there's no kiss thing.
There's a hint.
I think
there's
they hold hands, but it could also just be like, I'm relying on you. Like, you're the person I trust here the most moment. But yeah, that moment, she does seem a little sort of like, not ignorant, but just
they're
hypocritical
with
like,
each other. Yeah. And she's already making an exception for a guy she's known for less than a month, is what I'm saying. This guy's going to turn into a zombie and you're going to try and figure it out with him? No, girl.
Right.
Red flag. Move on.
Ditch him, girl.
She
does. He shoots himself in the head. And then we go to the post credits mid credits, and we see all this interspliced footage of Steve's video camera, which the people on the boat now find and then start recording what's happening to them. And they're sort of lost at sea and drifting and out of gas and don't have food or water. And they finally make it to this island that was their end game goal for escape. And it turns out there's zombies there. Yes, people do live on islands in the middle of a lake. Like, it happens, apparently. So thoughts on the way we close out? Sort of bleak.
My note is, and this is why I hate zombie movies. Because I was like, this is some bullshit. This is supposed to be the one hopeful moment, you know? Yeah. And it is the one good idea they've had in the whole fucking thing. And mm-hmm. it is an island in the middle of a lake, which I do think is rarer for people to live because they're usually a lot smaller. They don't have the same ability, like just logistically, you can't build as much there, whatever. So I was like, okay, this is not a bad idea, actually. And then the one good idea they've had, you know, is completely upended by zombies are already there. And then I, of course, go into the like, okay, so zombies could swim or they were there on what, a field trip? And then somebody got bit? Like what happened?
My thought goes to other people had the same idea of let's take our boats out to this island.
But somebody's already bit or whatever.
There,
yeah.
And then they all got it. So it's not people who live there, but that's just me grasping at straws.
No, that makes sense. I mean, and it's not like that is not outlandish. That's a good way, I think, to explain it. But it's just very frustrating after.
So you're not a fan of the trope of it was all for nothing.
No, I'm not. I'm like, they've already been dealing with so much and they've made stupid mm-hmm. decisions. But the one time they make a logical, reasonable decision that you can support and get behind, it also crashes and burns. No, not a fan.
Well, with you saying that, I have eliminated like 20 horror films from like, I'm never going to make Mackenzie watch this because it's a bleak fucking ending and it's all for nothing. Yeah.
I will just say I went into this with an open mind. And I picked the one that I actually thought, well, I had trouble finding the other one to be fair, but I did pick the one that I thought I would like better. And so I tried to be open-minded. And there, like you said, and you even made me appreciate parts of it more for sure by mm-hmm. deep diving on it. There are parts of it that are not bad that I don't hate, but no, I don't think this will ever be my genre. I think another one that comes to mind is like World War Z was a pretty universally acclaimed one as well.
I didn't like World War Z, honestly. I liked the book. I didn't love the movie.
I read the book. I liked the book okay, mm-hmm. but I'm a nerd, as we know. I read all the books. I didn't even like the book very much. I had to suffer through the book. But I didn't like it. So I don't know. Even the ones that people like, it's not my shtick, man.
Fair enough. Well, we still appreciate you giving it a chance. I'm trying some sci-fi this month. You're trying some zombie horror.
Go team. Go team. We're doing it.
I like that we're just going to alternate. I'll be miserable 1 week. You'll be miserable the next week. We'll just see.
This might be the shtick. Who knew? Like, this was the move.
So with that being said, what rating are you slapping on this guy?
Like a 5. Like a 5 out of 10.
That's actually, I'm pleasantly surprised by that. I thought you would have even gone under 5. So
I would have been under 5. I will say talking it through helps. I was at like a 4, 4.5. Mm-hmm. I think some of the things that even just looking at my notes, I was like, okay, I do appreciate more things than I thought of. Some of the humor, some of the shots mm-hmm. I think are well done. So yeah, some of the things we talked about like kind of upped it a little bit for me, but like no higher than 5. A flat 5.
That's fair. Yeah, I think I give this points because I do remember seeing it when it came out, and I wouldn't consider it the same as, it's not the same as nostalgia viewing, because it's not as though, oh, I just like this, because honestly, actually, most movies that I liked when I was 20 years old, I fucking despise now. There was a point where Boondock Saints was my favorite movie, and I'm just like, that is not as good.
I love Boondock Saints.
I mean, it's fun, but it is nowhere near my top 5, 10 anymore. Yeah. It's just a guilty pleasure watch at this point. But this movie, I view it through that lens of the precedent that it set, and it was pretty groundbreaking for the time that it came out. And I think it does a lot of things well, and I think it's still a fun watch, you know, if with some downfalls or downsides. So I'll still give it like an 8. I think if we were just a horror podcast, I would give this like a 9, because I think for me it's really good as far as the horror genre goes. But overall, in the scope of cinema, I'll give it like an 8, which I think is
pretty high
with the IMDb rating. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. You're close. Like you're in the 7/8 is the rating pretty much across the board. So I don't think you're far off, but I think it's a little high, but I totally get it. Especially again, you appreciate some of the horror history of it all too, that mm-hmm. That's just not my jam, but I think it's worth a watch. If you like horror, it's worth a watch for sure. I'll also asterisk my rating with that, you know.
Nice. There's one last thing that I wanted to call out about this, just because I found it very funny when I read it the other day, was that Zack Snyder filmed this movie in chronological order.
So I know.
The first show, they filmed it literally the last scene.
He didn't know.
It was his first directing gig, and he just went, oh, I thought that's the way you did it. You just recorded everything from start to finish. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works.
Which, like, even in my cinephileness, not, of course, being on any kind of production, I feel like I've learned adjacent to just watching movies. But I could totally see, and probably have at some point in my own life, thought that as well. Right. Like that. Yeah. Like, obviously you would. Why wouldn't you shoot it in chronological order if for no other reason than performances? Like,
right,
for them to be able to follow the story as well. Like, yeah, I saw it is really funny, but I also think it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. It gives you an appreciation for the actors, actually, of just, yeah, oh, they're filming the shit out of order. Did you happen to read the same thing that I did of when you're making a horror movie, what scene you're supposed to shoot first?
Isn't it the, like, final death scene,
yeah,
first?
The last, yeah, death scene, the very is what you're last. I don't know what the logic is behind it, of maybe, like, how
maybe
beaten
get it
up
out of the
character
way
is at that point. So you want it to be, like, to make sense with, like, the makeup and everything matching. I don't know if that's what it is, but either
maybe
way.
Maybe it's, like, setting the tone for, like, this is where it's going. This is this big moment. I don't know. But yeah, I did read that. So I guess maybe that's why. But anyway.
All right. We'll take us
home. Well, we made it through. I will say next week we're going to do, again, Inaugure April continues. And we are going to come back with one, again, that Lamar hasn't seen, Molly's Game. So this is a great film. If you want to watch it before we do it, highly recommend. But for now, go. Have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.